Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone, welcome to yet another episode of Deuce Backs, the first of the year 2016. We are here to catch up on how it ended last year and how this year might be beginning with the Australian Open starting soon. With us, we have a regular guest. First, to introduce my co-host, Umara. How are you, Umara?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you, Shree?
Yep, all good, all excited for the Open to start.
Yeah, we're going to be waking up in the middle of the night probably at stupid o'clock to watch some matches. So that should be fun.
Yeah, it's perfect time for me, but mostly I'll be at work. So I'll have to usually catch up on recaps or highlights.
No, I actually do make the effort to wake up at 2 in the morning if Federer's playing only though. Yeah. Call me crazy, but hey.
Special privileges to the special guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's also take time out to welcome Dan now. He's been in a great mood from the end of last year and he's been wishing this pod at least happened a month ago. We could not due to multiple reasons. So Dan, better late than never. Hello.
It feels like the Deuce Pod reunion, doesn't it, after all those years? It's been that long. It's hard to, like I was just saying to Mara before I started, it's hard to remember some of the tennis, some of the details of the individual matches now, isn't it, after all this time?
Yeah, let's hope we don't wait so long for the next one.
We won after the Aussie Open, definitely, when Murray wins it.
If Murray wins it, we might record it that night then.
If Federer wins it, we'll leave it till August.
No, that's not fair. Well, Murray's wife might give birth, so he might have to run off. He said he's going to leave if she does. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Fair play to him. I wonder, it's a question, do you think Federer would have ever done that?
Well, we don't know. We can't really ask that question. His babies weren't due in the middle of tournaments. But, you know, it's interesting. I mean, what if he was in the final or the semi-final and she gives birth? Would he leave? That's interesting.
That's what he said.
Did he?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
He said at any stage he would leave.
Really? Okay. Well,
she's not due till mid-February, so.
But as we know, babies don't always go to plan.
No. I've got one due on the 29th of January, so I feel his pain. If I was playing in the Aussie Open, I'd be coming back as well.
Oh, all right. That's nice. could be due on final day then, maybe. Is that right? Because near the end of the month.
A tennis baby.
Tennis baby, good.
Yeah, tennis baby. Then will it be named Andy or Novak?
No, she won't. No, I don't think Novak. So she could be named Serena, maybe.
Oh, we wanted Suarez, didn't we? Luis Suarez, but then that you said that she wouldn't have that.
Suarezabella. Suarezabella was there.
Luisa.
Where were they, yeah.
So since it's been a while since we caught up, so I think we should ideally start with where the year ended. And again, though we did predict Novak to win, but the way he started was slightly jittery. Dan, what would you have to say, especially losing to Federer in the round robins?
Well, I thought Mara might want to open on this one because that was one of Federer's best performances against Novak that I can remember, really. It was superb. You've got to say Novak were pretty good as well. So it was, you know, one of those games where they were both playing well and Federer came back. But you kind of knew, Novak would have something in the tank. He'd had something in the tank, something extra, something to beat everyone all year. Possibly the most extraordinary year in terms of individual success Even better in his 2011 year. So, yeah, although he lost in the group stage, you just kind of knew he'd pull it out when it really mattered. I think Amara's the one to speak to, though. She was the one there watching.
I didn't see that match, unfortunately. The finals are just way, way too expensive. But, I mean, obviously, if I could swap a win, I would have swapped the round-robin win for the final as well. And everyone was saying at the time that Djokovic is going to pull it out of the bag, and he did. And he just has that knack of going up a couple of levels. He looked a bit off slightly, maybe, when Federer played him, and Federer was playing amazing. But that's just the story with Federer, isn't it? He plays really well, and then he just falls short against Djokovic. You know, it's becoming a bit annoying now, to be honest. But yeah, he always seems to fall short in the final against him. I was hoping, you know, because it was London, an indoor tournament, he's always traditionally done really well there. But yeah, it wasn't meant to be. It was disappointing at the end. But, you know, I think Federer still had an amazing year. A couple of Grand Slam finals, only stopped by Djokovic, best player in the world by far right now. So, I mean, if you look at his season as a whole, I think he had a really, really good season, despite the disappointments of not being able to, you know, close out those really, really big matches. But yeah, it was really good. I went to see Federer Nishikori, so that was a really good match. And every time I've seen him, it's always been a three-set match, so I feel like I've got my money's worth. You know, I've got to see him for the whole time. It wasn't a quick match or anything where we just come and go. So that was nice. And I remember bombarding you guys with photos and annoying you all.
Has he always won every time you've seen Federer play live?
No, I've seen him three times. He's won twice, and he lost to Djokovic. I saw them in a round robin a couple of years ago. He lost, but that was a really good match as well, and it went sort of last to the last set, so... You know, and I got to see Djokovic as well, so that was a bonus. You know, he's the best player in the world by far right now. So, yeah, I mean, you know, to see him play live was great as well. You know, you can't have it all your way.
Yeah, Umi, so I have to ask you this, since you talked in a bit about how reviewing Federer's season. So do you think this more attacking approach helps in keeping the points short? How has it helped him? And is it because of that strategy that against Djokovic he seems to struggle, because it's not... If, let's say, Nadal was in peak form, I would think this game plan might not again work with Nadal. Mm. But we don't know. It's a hypothetical question with Nadal's form. But with how he plays against Djokovic, is it that the game plan is not working? What's your overall take on his attacking approach this season?
I think he has the right approach. You know, the attacking approach really has helped him. You know, people don't seem to really have an answer to it apart from Djokovic. But the thing with Djokovic, he's so athletic and... he's got so much stamina. If you've ever seen the two of them play, some of Federer's shots that he hits would be winners against anyone else. But this guy just gets everything back, and he gets them back as winners as well. So it's just, I don't think there's anything that Federer is doing particularly wrong. I think just Djokovic is just miles ahead at the moment, and he gets back shots that just defy belief. Sometimes you watch and you think, wow, that would have been a winner against Nadal, Murray, anyone else, and this guy gets it back, and gets it back with interest. So, and there's really nothing he can do about it. I mean, obviously he's a bit older as well, but he's playing some of the best tennis of his career. So I honestly don't think it's down to him. I just think he has no answers against him. There's nothing he can particularly do. I mean, he's beaten him obviously a few times, Cincinnati, and he beat him in the round robin. But when Djokovic is on point and his mind is all there, then I don't think there's a hell of a whole lot anyone can do.
Dan, I have a question for you similarly.
Go on, mate.
Yeah. You want to say something on this?
I was just gonna say the biggest defeat, possibly the only significant defeat that Djokovic had last year, was with Ricky at the French. And seems like, to me, the way to beat him is absolutely just try and dominate him with strength and power. Hit a flat ball rather than the spin to give him time to catch it. And you've just got to try and overpower him and bully him. And Wawrinka managed to do that. He didn't manage to do it for the whole of the match, but he managed to do it enough of the match to win. And for not Djokovic to win that World Tour Finals, that was the 11th title, the 11th ATP title, and he only won 10 in 2011. So it was kind of the end point to what could possibly be his most successful ever. I can't see him winning a Grand Slam. We'll probably talk about it later, but it's just too hard. Go on, mate, then what's the question?
Yeah, actually, you're part, partially answered my question. So the levels of domination he's gone on to in the last couple of seasons at least. So is there even any approach which might work? Yeah, the one I came to talk about was obviously Wawrinka. Wawrinka went all out. So it's a high-risk game. He had lots of winners, I think. He had 60 winners in a couple of sets, I think, but he had around 40 unforced errors also. So it's a high risk. If it works, it works. But the point is, it's not a sure shot strategy to go with. Maybe if you are a definite underdog, you are to go with. But I'm not sure if that's a worthwhile strategy to adopt as a game plan.
Well, it's not a consistent. It's never going to consistently beat him. And nor can all the players do it. I think when Murray used to beat him occasionally, I think he out-tacticked him, out-fought him, out-defended. Federer's got the style, the grace and the intelligence and the genius shots. I'm not sure he's got Wawrinka's power though now. So there aren't many players who could overpower Djokovic. And that's, you know, Andy Murray was saying at the start of this season, the only way, and this is a number two in the world, the only way to beat him is to keep watching his matches, keep seeing if there's any weaknesses, keep seeing if there's any flaws, because he cannot keep this level up. And then he goes and beats Nadal 1 and 2. So he clearly can, and he might even be getting better. It's ridiculous.
Dan, don't you think... Sorry.
Go on.
Sorry, don't you think a lot of people said that Djokovic choked in that French Open final a little bit? So maybe that was a little bit of him beating himself?
Yes, but I think to create the context for Djokovic to choke, he has to feel threatened and
pressure,
bullied. Yeah, bullied by Wawrinka. He couldn't get to the balls, and they were too powerful for him sometimes. And when Djokovic is in a situation, and it's very rare that he can't feel he can get it back or reach these winners, then you know it made him, you know, kind of choke. Which, you know, once a season isn't bad.
No, of course not. It just happened to be at a really pivotal moment, because if he had won that,
the history-making moment,
yeah.
So Dan, what I was coming to ask is the ability of Djokovic to there are lots of games, lots of important points where he's clearly on the defensive, but his ability to just slug it out and come out. I'm just thinking about the absolute peak of Djokovic versus the absolute peak of Nadal.
What, you want me to compare them? I think.
No, in terms of how would that even pan out? Because both of them it's going to be like the timeless stuff.
I think
Nadal is even more ridiculous in the amount of shots he would recover. Djokovic might overpower him, but Nadal will just not stop at his peak, at least.
I think Nadal had, at his peak, I think he had the longevity. I think he had the fitness. But I'm not sure he had the speed and agility that Djokovic has got. Not to that extent in defence. And I think Djokovic has got the intelligence to read where the opponent is going to put the ball, which gives him that fraction of a second to get there. At his peak, I'm not sure Nadal needed that.
But there is one point we should always remember. The importance or the differentiator of a left-hander.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Off-the-hand forehand would just kill anyone. Even if Federer had his peak, that just off-the-hand forehand would just kill anyone.
Certainly would. And the best left-handed forehand and the most spin I've ever seen put on a tennis ball. So he did have the skills. I'm not sure any of his peak was as good as what Djokovic is showing now. But you've heard me before eulogising Djokovic. So maybe to get a more objective answer, you might need to speak to him.
That's what we'll just move on to. It's a good segue to move on to the second about the dominant seasons you've seen. So Umi, do you remember that season of Federer where it's like he was like literally this unstoppable train?
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of research for just obviously for the purposes of this pod, and you can compare probably Federer's 2006 and Djokovic's 2015 and maybe even his 2011, depending on how you look at it. But obviously, we're talking about this one. I think both sort of seasons have a really, really strong case. It depends if you're which camp you're in. Obviously, I'm going to favour slightly Federer, and Dan will probably go for Djokovic. But I think both have really, really good, strong cases.
Do you have any numbers though, Umi, if you have research?
Let me just look. Yeah, so Federer, he played more matches. They had a 92-5 record and Djokovic had an 82-6. They both won three Grand Slams. I think Federer won Let me just have a look. Sorry. 11. No, Federer won 12 titles and Djokovic won 11, but Djokovic won more Masters. So his titles were probably bigger. But then you've got the fact that Federer had three seasons, 5, 6, and 7, I believe, where he won three Grand Slams and only lost the French to Nadal, who's probably the greatest clay court player ever. So obviously I'm going to look at it from that slant, so that, you know, that gives more sort of that makes it even more an achievement, because he probably would have beaten anyone else in those finals, and we'd be talking, he possibly could have had 3 or 4 seasons where he'd done the calendar Grand Slam if it hadn't have been for Rafa. But yeah, I'm sure Dan will make a strong case for Djokovic.
Dan, years of three slams each. Djokovic, can he do it?
I think you've got to measure the standard of the opposition, the whole draw, when you're measuring how good Djokovic's year is. Because he's got arguably Federer nearly his peak in terms of intelligence, in terms of ability. You know, he seems to just improve. He seems to have moved with the time. Nadal, I don't think Nadal hasn't been at his peak this year, so you can't, like you say, about the French Open, which he also lost. That was the kind of moment that had made it the most, you know, if beyond all arguments, had he won the French this year, this would have been the best year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his record, there's only against Andy Murray, he played him 7 times, won 6 times. Federer was the only person to beat him more than once last season. He beat him 3 times, but Djokovic beat him 5 times and in possibly the important ones. And then his record against the rest of the players was unbelievable. You know, 26-0 against players ranked 50 or above. Every single player ranked below 50 didn't have his chance against Djokovic all season. That's a huge, you know, dominance level. Not even to drop one measly match against them. He didn't lose any matches against a left-hander, beat every single left-hander he played all season. That was 18-0, and he was 64-6 against right-handers. So it was a huge dominance in terms of just all the matches. He wasn't losing sets either in many of the Grand Slams. You know, he wasn't challenged as much. And it was only in, like you say, when Wawrinka hit his straps, went for the win, took risks against him. That's the only way to challenge him in this form. And for him to have a season like this, he needs to do the Grand Slam, because so many players have won three. Or Federer and Djokovic are the players that, and Nadal, I think, has won three in a year. So, you know, it's huge.
But Dan, the only thing is, though he lost to Wawrinka, I think throughout the year, the most wobbly when I saw Djokovic was actually against Kevin Anderson. Was it Wimbledon, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, that's one game, and that's a fair point. But what is Anderson's huge serve, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, so you need that power.
The problem is, it's not a flaw, but at least you could say it's not his greatest. And I've seen him struggle against Anderson. I've seen him struggle against
Karlovic. He lost to Karlovic.
Isner, I think Isner, I've seen him struggle. I've seen him struggle against Martin Cilic a couple of times. He doesn't lose,
I was going to say that I think, sorry, Federer's 2006, he was dominant. Like, he was crushing opponents, whereas Djokovic, slightly different, maybe not beating people by that much margin, but still, he obviously still done it. And people argue that the caliber of the opponent wasn't as good then, but then he was winning by some margin for Federer then. So I don't know if you can compare the two like that. I mean, he didn't pick his opponents. It's not his fault that they weren't that great then, but he was beating them by some way. I didn't think he didn't drop a set in the 2007 Australian Open. So he was pretty much, and I think he was 7,000 points ahead in the rankings at one point. It was something ridiculous like that.
So all fair points. I think it's, I think the standard's better nowadays.
I agree with you there.
And to do it when the context is harder for me, I'd give it a slight edge, but it's hard to measure. It's so hard to measure that, you know, people. And it's only, what, 9 year difference, 9, 10 year difference in, has there been that much of an increase in standard? You know, Pete Nadal was amazing as well. You had to beat that. I'm not sure any of the other 3 or 4 players that were challenging Novak this year were as good as a Pete Nadal.
So do you think a 2006 Federer v a 2015 Djokovic, what would happen?
I think Djokovic would win in five.
Do you think?
Sri's got the casting vote. Who would win that match, Sri?
I would say it depends on the surface too.
Yeah, I think Djokovic obviously won on a lot more varied surfaces, whereas Federer had an issue on clay even in those great seasons because of Rafa, though. Was it Rafa's thorn in his side?
Go on, Sri. Who would win that? Who would win it on the hard court? I think that's where they've both been as dominant. Hard and grass.
I think hard court, Djokovic would win. Grass, Federer would win.
What's sitting on the fence?
So who would win on clay?
I think Djokovic would win on clay.
Yeah, I think the speed of the court suits his game, doesn't it? Federer plays well on those fast courts.
I'm not as convinced that a peak Federer on clay would lose to a peak Djokovic on clay. I think Federer's got a slight edge on clay. Mm.
Well, Federer was a brilliant clay court player. Like we said, he could have had 3, 4, 5 French Open titles if it hadn't have been for Rafa. So you've got to think, okay, he was losing to Rafa, but Rafa was just another level on clay. And if he had won those finals, there would be no doubt that he's the great. Oh, well, to me, there's no doubt anyway, but there wouldn't be a doubt at all that he would have been the greatest, because it would have been on all surfaces, whereas he just had the one when Rafa was injured.
Yeah, I think that's something to be considered about Federer losing to Rafa, the greatest, while Djokovic losing to Wawrinka.
I agree.
But so nice. I'm not sure. So I think we should leave it at that. I think listeners might form their own opinion depending on whom they like or whom they favor or what they remember, depending on how long they've seen the game. So moving on to the next topic, I'm going to come to Dan last, because I think, though I've called it favorite moments, I think he's going to just talk about favorite moment. So I'm going to keep Dan till then. Umara, top 5 moments across tennis, across anything you've seen in tennis, not restricted to ATP, WTA, junior, doubles, singles, any 5 moments which you can, if I ask you to talk about any 5 moments, what does come to your mind?
Okay, so not matches, but moments I've picked, is that okay?
Any moment. It could be matches or anything.
Okay, yeah. Well, they're not in any particular order, but I had picked out the US Open women's final just because it was just really nice to see the two Italians playing instead of just Serena winning everything. I know Serena, obviously a lot of people were rooting for her to win that calendar Grand Slam, but I thought that was a really nice moment. So that's one of my favourite moments. And I had I'm going to have a few Federer moments, but I think Dan will balance that out later. But I've got Federer's match against Murray at Wimbledon. I just thought he was amazing. His serving was brilliant. And I really thought he had a chance in the final, but then it didn't happen. But that match against Murray he blew him away with just immaculate serving. And it was the speed, the placement, everything was there. And like I said, he had me really, really confident for the final, but it just didn't work out. Djokovic then, as we know, just, goes up another level. I had the Stan Wawrinka in the French Open, because I don't think anyone was expecting it. I remember just watching open mouthed, you know, at the shots he was playing and the speed, and that backhand is just awesome when he hits it in its full flow. It's beautiful. But his shorts were awful. Yeah, that they you should never ever wear those shorts ever again. Is that 3 or 4? 3.
You can go on. We have had only one Federer moment, so you can go on.
Oh, can I go on? Okay. You know what I've picked as one of my favorite moments, it's not a moment actually, it's just in general, Federer just getting to 2 Grand Slam finals. I mean, he's 35 now. Is he 35? Yep, he's 35 now. He's 34 now. He getting to 2 finals, and you know, he wasn't easily beaten in those finals. You know, he did give Djokovic a good match. It wasn't like it was a straight set or anything like that. But just seeing him playing that brilliant tennis and that US Open that he played, even though, again, he lost in the final, that US Open was some of the best tennis I've ever seen him play. So that as a whole sort of thing for me as a Federer fan is really nice to see him playing so brilliantly at this stage of his career and still being in the conversation, regardless of people writing him off or saying that, you know, he's too old to do to win Grand Slams again. He's still there or thereabouts. And like I said, if it hadn't been for Djokovic being so just amazing right now, he would probably have a couple more this year. So that for me was just a highlight, even though it sort of had disappointments littered in that year. So that they're my moments. I don't think they were five, but they're my moments.
Good enough. Best moments. So as I said, Dan will go next because I want to give that limelight section to him.
Oh, and so seeing Federer live. Sorry, I have to put that one in there. Just seeing him play was amazing.
Great. For me, one of the moments was, as you also talked about it, Panetta winning the finals and announcing the retirement as when she won the trophy. That was one. One of them was seeing this guy, one of my favorite players who's been injured for the last few years, Del Potro, trying to make a comeback. He did briefly come in a couple of times. So for me personally, as a huge Del Potro fan, for me, it was great seeing him play. That was one. Leander Paes partnering his 100th different doubles partner. That was one of the moments. Sanya Mirza and Hingis dream run. It's still going on now. They are currently on 29, I think, continuous wins, best record in the last 20 years odd. So that is one. And obviously, Wawrinka's shots and the win in the final was one of them. And the last moment I had was Serena Williams going back and playing in Indian Wells. So these are my top moments. So, Dan, it's up to you. You can make it as a favorite moment section or you could do the segue to the next topic.
Well, I think it's fair. You've just stolen my one there. My non-playing tennis moment was Serena going back to Indian Wells. Definitely. I think, obviously, the Wawrinka match against Djokovic have highlighted probably the match of the season in terms of unexpected. But all my highlights really come from the Davis Cup and mainly Andy Murray. I think I'm going to go through the rounds. Beat United States in the first round indoors. I think that was in Scotland, and the atmosphere was incredible. And Ward beat Isner, and it was actually turned out to be a vital rubber. Possibly, I know Murray won all these games, but we lost the doubles, so it turned out to be a vital, vital point.
We needed that single.
Yeah, absolutely needed it. And some of the most limited tennis I've ever seen from John Isner in that match against Ward. I've never seen someone who had such a powerful weapon in one element, which was his serve, and then a seeming inability to hit any other tennis shot for about two sets. He couldn't hit a forehand, he couldn't hit a volley. They were missing by metres, never mind inches. And it was just strange to see. Anyway, and then we beat France at home, and that was the only match that we had that was on grass. And I think, you know, it was a little bit lucky that we had three home ties to get to the final. But in the final, away at Belgium, with the security fears and playing on clay, I have to say I was very worried. I didn't know if I was going to get any favourite moments. And it's strange that, although I'm going to come on to Andy Murray's performance later, possibly just underneath the winning moment when Murray did it was Kyle Edmund's first couple of sets. I couldn't believe the standard that he's such a young lad to come in and play like that, making his debut in the final. Because one of the sad things about the Davis Cup win has been the dominance of and needing Murray to put in the most astonishing performance ever in Davis Cup history, which I'll come to. But to have someone develop in the final or appear in the final and then give you a little bit of hope that there's going to be other players there to just keep us in the group in the main draw rather than be in all the different zones that you have to do to qualify to even actually play in the proper Davis Cup. But let's come on to Andy Murray. Not only did he win the sports personality, this was, I think, by far the best individual performance in any Davis Cup history. He got the most points. He won more than Novak Djokovic. So 11 rubbers in a single year he won, if you include the doubles as well. 8-0 in his singles record. Djokovic only got 7 points. Federer got 7 points when Switzerland won in 2014. Nadal got 6 points for Spain in 2011. So in terms of an individual contribution to winning a trophy, I never thought I'd see Great Britain win, especially after 20 years of not even knowing the players that we're playing against and going out to. To do that, it's just... I think Murray himself agrees that it's possibly his greatest performance, because it's not just one tournament. It's carrying a nation, which you never really play for other than the Olympics, to a competition which involves, you know, different countries playing against you, different standards of tennis. It involves doubles, which we've spoke about before, and a huge credit to Jamie Murray as well and those two in their doubles match winning that crucial rubber, and then, you know, embracing at the end. It's fantastic, you know, the family to be able to experience that was, you know, just that's what I love about tennis, and that's what I love about these two at the moment and what their mother has done to make them into such good players. So credit to Judy as well.
So Umi, did you manage to catch any of the Davis Cup?
Yeah, I did watch some of the final, not all of it, but I remember watching the doubles, because I think that was, just as Dan just said, one of the decisive one, because I think had they have lost that, they may possibly, it was a bit touch and go after that. But once they had won that, am I right, Dan, in saying that? And they had to win.
Yeah, they'd have possibly lost the final rubber.
So, right, yeah. Could have done, because obviously you've got Andy Murray to win his, but then the other one might not have worked out. But yeah, so that, I remember watching that, and yeah, that they played really, really well in that. But yeah, it's brilliant for British tennis, I guess. And like Dan said, it's not, you know, the whole year round, players, although they represent their countries, but really they're not really playing for their country. It's quite an individual kind of sport. So it's nice to give the country and the nation, and the atmosphere in the Davis Cup is so amazing. It's nothing like it in world tennis. It's one of those ones, it's almost like a football match, you know, people singing and chanting, and you don't have that in tennis matches. The crowd's quite reserved still, especially over here in England, but that's really nice to see. And yeah, like I said, you don't get that anywhere else, and it really just adds to the sort of the charm of the event. So yeah, I was a brilliant performance from Great Britain, Andy Murray. Well, I think we're all safe in saying if Andy Murray wasn't there, England wouldn't have had a chance. But
so Dan,
you can't keep saying England, Amara.
Sorry, England. Just comes out.
Andy Murray will be tutting massively if he hears that.
Sorry. Oh yeah, because he's not even English. Oh God. Britain.
So Dan, Andy Murray winning Wimbledon was huge for British tennis. So what does this do for British tennis?
Hopefully, it does more. Like you say, like Amara's just outlined, then it's an individual thing, and a lot of Andy Murray gets a fair bit of stick still, in especially in England, especially with a lot of the London press. There's still a little bit of snide about some of the coverage that he gets when he's playing on his own, especially when he loses. So to have it within a team event, and you can see how much of a team that they are, and you can see how, like you say, when it's probably when you get the most representative crowd of the British public, when you see a Davis Cup tie, and the Scottish atmosphere and the American one was superb. Just out of this world noise wise. So it's that kind of thing. And that's what's going to develop tennis. That's what's going to get the kind of volume of youngsters that you need to be challenging for Davis Cups consistently, to be producing any more Andy Murrays. So it can only be a good thing. And I'm not sure he will, and I'm not sure you should expect him to. But if Andy Murray continues to play in it and continue, maybe not this season, but plays in it for maybe another couple of goals, then that could do even more, especially if he takes it as seriously as he has this season. Because if he can't beat Djokovic, he may as well try and win something.
So Andy Murray is going to play in Rio?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, his priorities this season are Rio and Wimbledon.
Everybody is talking about Rio this season.
Yeah.
That might be something worth watching.
Defending his title.
I think that might be something worthwhile watching this time.
Do we know what kind of court we're going to have in Rio?
No idea.
I have no idea.
I think generally there, it might be a hard court or an indoor court is what I think, but I'm not sure.
No, mate. I'll have to find that out for the next pod.
Does it depend on the country that this host? Is it up to them, or is there any specific thing they have to follow?
No, it's up to Brazil, because obviously we played on grass.
Mm.
We played at Wimbledon, so it's just down to the... I think in Barcelona they played on clay, obviously.
Yeah, I was thinking, I thought in Brazil they might play on clay, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, so. The only thing immediately once I think of Brazil is Gustavo Kuerten. So I think it's immediately clay.
Yeah, that's
and,
what I
and,
think.
And Rios as well, wasn't it? Rios, is that his name?
Rios was Chile.
Oh, right? Was it? Was it?
Oh, if it's clay, then Federer's not winning his gold medal.
Nadal? Could Nadal get a gold medal?
That would be interesting.
I think Federer might not win a gold, but I think Switzerland might get a gold.
Will those two play together? Wawrinka and Federer?
I think they might. Why not?
They should do, yeah. I mean, they've won it once before together, so.
But are Jamie and Andy playing together?
I don't know. It's not been announced. That would be good.
That's a fair shout for a medal there.
They lost in the lost at Wimbledon, didn't they?
Yeah, that's a definite medal chance, though, especially since they have shown they could play on clay. And if it's clay, it's a definite possibility for them to go for one. So anyway, let's coming to the topic at hand. Australian Open, first Grand Slam of the year. Traditional season openers are over. You had tournaments at Brisbane, Sydney. So anyone of you have followed any of the tournaments, pre-season tournaments, before we head to Australian Open?
I watched the Brisbane final. Obviously, Federer was in that, but he lost. So that wasn't that great. But I didn't follow the whole tournament. They weren't showing a lot of them on TV either. So just highlights here and there. So it's good preparation. I mean, it's a really quick one tournament, and then obviously the Australian Open starts, so they don't have much time to sort of get many matches under their belt. But still, getting to a final is good preparation, and we'll see what he does in Australia, Melbourne.
He played at Brisbane, I believe. Novak and Rafa played at Doha, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, I think Novak won a draw. Where was Andy Murray playing? Hopman Cup or anything else with that?
I'm not sure. I've been struggling to follow the tennis with all the football on three, and it's cricket season as well. But I know that, I mentioned it earlier, Djokovic. I was listening to a tennis podcast the other day. I'm not going to give them any plug, but I was listening to one, and they said that it was the most one-sided final between, you know, perceived top four, top five players that they'd ever seen. There was a bit of niggle from the crowd who were trying to coach Nadal. It was that embarrassing. So that doesn't bode well for everybody else. I'm not particularly convinced that Murray's mind is on the Australian Open. I know he's got rid of, was it Bjorkman and returned, oh, forgotten name, my name's gone, remind me. French, I can't believe it. Maresmo, he's brought Maresmo back in as coach. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a Djokovic all the way. Unfortunately, and Serena.
And Serena.
We had Wawrinka here in my city, so at least he considers this as a lucky charm. He just keeps coming here. He sees this weather as a good preparation and he keeps winning. So it was literally for each year this tournament is going bigger. We had Kevin Anderson this year. So Kevin Anderson was here. But I saw the tournament. I didn't go to the stadium, but I saw every match. And I think he didn't even get out of third gear at least. Finals, we had this young light called Koric who was playing. He seems to be a really good guy though. That young guy seems to be playing well. But Wawrinka never got out of third gear and was comfortable. I think now he's won three times now on the trot here. So he considered this as a lucky charm for his season. The 2 years before he won the Australian Open, then last year he won the French Open. So he's hoping for something similar. So it's a comfortable player. I'm not sure whether he was pushed, but maybe as a first season opener, you don't need to get pushed. So is Australian Open a foregone conclusion for you, as Dan said, Umi?
Have you guys seen the draw? Because the draw's out.
I've seen the draw. Well, Murray's got Zverev, the German.
But Federer teenage, and Djokovic are in the same half, and Murray and Rafa and Wawrinka are in the same half. So, Federer semi-final for Federer. No, we don't know because obviously he might not even get that far. But yeah, that was annoying to see.
Is Federer seeded third?
Yes, because Murray nicked the second seeding from him at the end of the year, didn't he?
He did.
Was it the Davis Cup that did it? Because they get points for that, don't they?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay, all right. Well, he's, so they've avoided each other. Oh, they've obviously avoided each other, Murray and Djokovic. But Federer's in, he's in
I think it was a quirk. Djokovic. I think it was a quirk of the rankings that Murray didn't have to defend as many points or something towards the end because he was injured the year before and Federer did, something like that.
But still, even so, I mean, he's got Wawrinka and Nadal. That's not easy.
So, Umi, I have a question for you.
God, is it
better that he is actually facing or possibly could face Djokovic in the same final rather than final, considering last year?
I suppose it's less painful to lose in the semi-final, isn't it, than the final?
Or you'll watch one
depending on how you look at it, I suppose.
Or you'll watch one game less.
No, I don't want to watch one game less. I want to watch all seven. But I don't know. It depends on how you look at it. Like I said, if he is going to lose, losing finals is tougher, isn't it? But then getting to finals is good as well. So I don't know really how to look at that one. Hopefully he'll beat him this time. Hopefully Djokovic is maybe just thinking about something else that day. I don't know how he's going to do it, but yeah, he has to get there first. He hasn't got, he's got Dimitrov possibly in the fourth round if he gets that far. So that's not going to be easy. They had an epic match at Brisbane recently, quite a long three set match. And after that, his draw's not too bad until obviously the quarterfinals, he might have Berdic. But to be honest, the draw's not that bad for Federer up until the semifinals.
So Dan, how is it for Djokovic? Pretty smooth sailing.
I think there's not that many. Seppe could be a possible opponent. There's Karlovic is in his half who beat him. Obviously, we've been talking about him losing to big servers. It just doesn't happen in a slam, though, does it? Tsonga is in that half of the draw. It's not going to happen. I just wanted to mention Serena's got a pretty tough opener. The highest unseeded player in Camilla Giorgi, the Italian, and the Brits is Conta's got Venus Williams. Unlucky.
Yeah, we saw that this morning. she's been playing well, so
definitely. Heather Watson has got Timea Babos, Hungarian, and Kyle Edmund's got Demir Zumba, the Bosnian player. I've not really seen him play, so yeah, they could be. Maybe three Brits through to the second round of the Aussie Open. That's not going to happen very often.
I think Azarenka, as usual, won the pre-season opener before Australian Open, and that's a good omen for her usually. I'm not sure what seeding she's got, Azarenka, but she's one of my favourite players to watch. So I'll be watching for her.
She won a tournament, didn't she? Sydney, was it?
Yeah, Sydney.
Yeah, I saw some of the final. Yeah, so hopefully when she's back to her best, I think she's the only really person who can challenge Serena. I don't see Sharapova even challenging Serena. I don't think she can. The other girls, Halep and Muguruza, I think is his third seed. Muguruza possibly has beaten her recently. Yes, Azarenka in her pomp, like, was the only one who really pushed Serena. I mean, she met her in the US Open final a couple of years ago and nearly, gave her a good match.
I think at absolute best with the game plan, the people follow. I think the only two people I can say pre-match that Serena can be beaten is one is Azarenka or on a real best, Petra Kvitova.
Oh, God, don't talk to me about we know she can probably beat Djokovic on her day. Honestly, she's that good on her day, but she just can't seem to string two performances together. She's
kind of talking about Djokovic. Her game plan is so risky. She exactly. thinks if it works, the work can be Djokovic. Dan might not like that.
So I was just trying to look through what half of the or quarter of the draw is Azarenka in. Is she in Venus? Is she in Serena's? There she is.
Wait, what half is she in? Bottom half?
She's in the bottom half of the draw. That's good. Yes, so. Yeah, Azarenka Williams final then. Serena. Off that tip. If you reckon she's playing well. I haven't seen her now, to be honest.
She, it was, I would say, 80% close to her best. But the women's side is so tough to predict, except Serena. If you take out Serena, you can't even say who would be the semi-finalist, let alone the final.
So, yeah, I totally agree.
And Serena, is she a fit? Because she did pull out of a tournament before, didn't she? I thought she was... She's not 100% maybe, so you never know. And then, like you said, then you just anyone's game. You know, some unseeded player could probably come and win it. We just don't know for the women's.
Have you got anything on the doubles, Sri? Any info?
Nope. I'm sure. See, if you ask me about women's doubles, I can say openly what might happen. Because that form there, then they're like, even done. 29 matches unbeaten. I think last was in 94 or 95 with Novotna.
Wow.
Sheer unreal. They're just little, they complement each other so well that, I don't know, even if they are at 80% level, they'll win the Grand Slam. I'm sure Sanya and Hingis. Hingis complements Sanya's game so well, and Sanya's forehand, and like, oh, that's not, it's, the effect of that forehand in women's game is like unreal. From day one, that was a strong point. But in doubles, it just kills opponents when you pair it up with Hingis. So women's doubles, there's no doubt for me. They should be winning it. Men's doubles, it's again becoming like poker. It's tough to call. I have no idea what's going to happen at men's doubles. Everybody's changing partners. I think Leander is again changing partners. Leander actually wanted to pair up with Bopana considering Rio Olympics. This, I think, is what? 92, 96, 2000, 2004, 8, 12. This might be his 7th Olympics.
Wow.
How many
individual partners does he have now? More than 100?
Yeah, 100 was Breach. I think Granollers was his 101st year this year. So I think he's on 101 or 102.
Wow.
So he wanted to pair up with Bopana this year considering Olympics, but Bopana wasn't interested and they have previous history considering the fiasco which happened in 2012. So there's a huge history behind.
What fiasco was this?
In 2012 Olympics, there was a huge debate as to who should partner Sanya and who should partner each other in doubles because Mahesh and Leander weren't on good terms. So ultimately, there was a huge bartering going on. And ultimately, they said, Leander will partner Sanya in mixed doubles. So since he gets his preference in mixed doubles, he was paired with this young guy called, I think, Vishnuvardhan in men's doubles rather than Bopana, while Bhupati went with Bopana. So it was not about the best combination in both. It was about a compromise being arranged.
Oh, okay.
Because nobody wanted to play with Leander.
Nobody likes Leander. Billy No Mates. Why didn't they like him then?
No idea. He was closer to Mahesh Bhupati, so Rohan Bopana wanted to play with Bhupati. Mm-hmm. While Leander was like, Leander's point was he's the best ranked doubles player. So he should get a choice of whom he should partner with.
It's all politics.
That makes
isn't it?
More sense to me though. Surely you pick your best doubles player and let him pick his partner so that they can work together.
And win.
He was the highest ranked doubles player then in 2012. But he got his preference in mixed doubles, Sanya. But Sanya wasn't that good in mixed doubles then, 2012. Though she had an Asian Games medal, but Olympics was a different, bigger fish to fry.
Will you be able to watch much of it? Do you get any much access to the doubles in Aussie Open or many of the Grand Slams?
We do get, especially if Sanya plays, we do get live. We do get live access when Sanya plays. But otherwise, initial rounds, we don't get anything.
Well, it's just because the only time I ever get to watch doubles, really, is Wimbledon. And when they give you the options on BBC, they give you the different courts so you can pick and choose.
Yeah.
But semi-final and final, especially if either Leander is there or Sanya is there, we get live telecast. So we ensure we get that here. So otherwise, we don't get to see anything of the doubles till quarterfinals, at least in Grand Slams. And in other normal Masters, we don't see it at all, literally. It's only if you're like, you need to follow it online. So considering Australian Open, so you're going with Djokovic and Serena then?
I'm going to go with Djokovic and Azarenka because your tip that she's been playing well. Just so I can cheer somebody else on. So I can cheer somebody else on
first round then.
But I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Serena won the Grand Slam. So that's how dominant she was last year. She just bottled it in the US Open.
Umi, do you remember this foolhardy thing we did of picking wild card?
I learnt my lesson. I'm going to go Djokovic, and I don't even know for the women's. It has to be Serena, but if Serena doesn't, then I have absolutely no idea. But I was just checking the draw, and yeah, she has got quite a tough draw, but Sharapova's in her side of the draw, so Sharapova's probably not very happy. She never wins against her.
Who's number two then? Radwanska is number two,
Who won
the season?
Isn't it Halep or Muguruza? One of those two.
Halep's number two.
And then it's Muguruza's number three. And this is bad.
Okay, so my outside tip is going to be the number two seed, Halep.
He is outside in the women's game.
So Dan, do you even have an outside tip, or are you going to say Federer is the outside tip?
No, Andy Murray, the number two seed, is the outside tip as long as his wife doesn't give birth.
That's how dominant the number one players are, that the number two is an outside tip.
Yeah.
Silly, really, isn't it?
No, I think, to be brutally honest, you could put 16 maybe names into a hat from the women's side, and if Serena doesn't win it, any of those could. There's that many, which is a good thing. It's just that we need Serena to retire, so it makes it completely really competitive.
The betting will go for a toss.
I wonder what the betting is. I haven't even seen the odds. I bet they're both massive odds on.
Absolutely. I think if Serena doesn't win, then I think my two tips are going to be Azarenka or Radwanska.
Radwanska, she won the year end, didn't she?
Season ender.
Yeah, the year end in Singapore. Forgot about that. And she played really well. I was quite surprised. I didn't think she was going to win that one. And it's absolutely slipped my mind who she played now. And she played someone who's a big hitter. Who did she play?
Kvitova, I think.
Kvitova. Yeah, because Kvitova beat... that's why I remember. Kvitova beat Sharapova really, really well in the semis, and she played really, really good. And then she played well for about a set and a half in this one, and then completely lost it, like she does.
Like she does.
And I don't even know. I was quite confident with her because she's really good indoors, and you know, there's no sort of wind or anything, and the way she hits the ball, it suits her game to play indoors. But Radwanska really, really played well that day, actually. Yeah, remember that. As we said, because we've had such a long gap, I'd completely forgotten.
I think we none of us have talked. I think this might be actually be the year for Kvitova then.
It would be take a brave man to predict
anything remotely.
She could go out in the first round just as easily as she could win it. You just don't know with her. But I think the heat of the Australian Open is not good because she's not well, and she doesn't cope well with she doesn't have the stamina, so I don't think she's going to do well there at all.
I heard suddenly, at least from one of my cousins who lives there, that suddenly Melbourne got cold for a day or two. So I don't know. It was very hot one day, then it immediately became very cold, it seems like. Not sure.
Yeah, so if the conditions are humid and hot, I don't think they're going to suit her at all. So I wouldn't be tipping her for anything.
She might just blast her way to glory or exit.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. She could win it or not. Or she could lose the first round.
I think mentally she might say 1 hour, whatever happens.
Either of you got predictions on how much controversy Kyrgios is going to cause in his home Grand Slam?
Well, we can predict there will be some. What it will be, we don't know.
I think it might be one of the Australians causing problems. I'm not sure whether it is going to be him. It might be Tomich to do something.
Because he's been Tomich is another one as well, yeah.
So you could predict one of the Australians to do something crazy, but I don't want to bet on him alone. So that would be a good bet. One of the Australians to screw up something. By the way, did any of you see that thing, this game where Hewitt played and this video floating around about this guy shouting out saying, challenge the sir? Did you guys see?
I didn't know.
No, I didn't either.
Explain that one.
There was this great, you should check it out on video, some sportsmanship, I forgot the guy's name. So Hewitt serves and then it's called out. And this guy shouts from the other side saying, it's in challenge. And Hewitt is bewildered. He's like, what? And he's like, no, I'm sure. Challenge it. So Hewitt doesn't believe it. And then he challenges after a while and it was in. It was really good video to watch.
What tournament was this?
I'm not sure about the tournament. It's floating out now. So if it's reason, it has got to be the Hopman Cup. Though I'm not sure whether Hewitt played in the Hopman Cup.
Says it was Jack Sock. Hopman Cup.
Exactly, that is the video.
He was a sporting gesture, apparently. The American invited Hewitt to challenge a call, getting it reversed in his opponent's favor. Oh, okay, so it was the guy he was playing against.
Yeah, it was. So Hewitt serves, and it was called as a fault, and this guy shouts saying, challenge, and it's in. And Hewitt is like, what? And then he stops for 10, 15 seconds. This guy again says, go ahead, challenge it. And so Hewitt doesn't know what to do, and he challenges it. And it was very clearly thunderous.
Yeah, I've just got it up actually. So yeah, I just saw having a look. But yeah, that's interesting. So Hopman Cup, that's obviously not a, is it an important tournament? Can you see him doing that in a Grand Slam? Don't think so.
And, how many people even do it at Hopman Cup?
Exactly, but still.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's no way you'd do that in a Grand Slam, would you?
No, of course you wouldn't.
You take them because sometimes you do it and it's opposite way around.
They do it at sort of the clay tournaments, don't they, where they just rub it out when you know that the umpire is going to come and check anyway. But you wouldn't just do it when no one's checking or when no one's really going to challenge it. You wouldn't say it then, really, would you?
I think Dan should check that out.
I'm going to, yeah, well. I think you should tweet it as well underneath the podcast link when it's released.
Yeah.
It's been floating around for the last 2-3 days about this incident. You, the best thing to watch is Hewitt's face in there.
Still competitive, is he? I thought he'd retired to be a Davis Cup captain.
I think Hopman Cup he played.
Did he?
He's going to be non-playing captain, is it?
Isn't it like an exhibition? Didn't Watson and Murray play together or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw them coming out for a match.
If he played in the Hopman Cup, because I remember Andy Murray playing in the Hopman Cup.
Yeah, he did with Heather Watson. I remember that. I have no idea if they won, though.
No, I don't think they did.
Right, okay.
Neither do I think. They were trailing when I was watching. I was fleetingly catching multiple games, so I think. As Dan initially said, with the amount of football, if I ask for TV for any other sport, I'll get slaughtered.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I haven't got time for any other sport, really. But cricket on the radio sometimes. Too many games, the festive fixtures.
Dan, do you think Konta might go on a run like she did at the US Open? If she gets past Venus, of course.
Yeah, that's the stumbling block there. No. I don't think she'll beat Venus, but if she does, then yes. Just because it's that unpredictable, and I think she struggles against really powerful players.
Okay, it's interesting because she had a good one at the US Open, didn't she? Fourth round, I think. Yeah.
She had a good run towards the end of last season, didn't she? Wasn't she like
was it 16 matches or something? Yeah,
16 for one or 16 for two after the US Open. She won two tournaments leading up.
Hopefully, she'll take that confidence through. We'll see.
Definitely. I think she will. She was talking about the fact that it wasn't anything to do with the change of technique or training. It was all about a psychologist that she'd employed.
Yeah, I remember listening to an interview. Yeah.
So fascinating.
It's all character. In the mind.
Yeah, that's what she thinks, and it seems to be working.
So 2 weeks down the line, are we going to be talking about Djokovic winning most probably?
Yeah, I think we will. Judging by his performance against Nadal.
I saw the highlights of that. My God. I think the live itself would have been like highlights only.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the other podcast
Nadal said. Nadal didn't stand a chance. He won literally nothing. He got a point here, point there. That's about it. Literally won nothing. I think his level again dropped because he was clearly coming up, but this was like really alarmingly bad.
They were showing sort of Australian Open Classic Finals, and yesterday they showed that 6-hour marathon that they had a couple of years ago. Was it Rafa and Djokovic? Was it Rafa, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. One of the best ever.
It was, yeah. I remember that. I said
that was one of my best ever matches.
It was.
In the first podcast we ever did. Remember that? In 2007. Yeah. However long ago it felt.
Yeah, I remember that first episode in 2007 where I predicted that next year Federer and Nadal would have that epic 2008.
Oh. That was a good one, actually. There's this up-and-coming Scottish lad as well called Andy Murray that we need to keep an eye on.
I think even Nostradamus wouldn't have predicted that, though, Dan.
No, not with that record recently.
Good. So we are done. We should be back in the next 2 weeks to review the Australian Open. Till then, keep listening. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.